George, take it away.
All right, so good morning. Sorry for the delay. So what I'm gonna do first is give a very basic go to like control 101 in about half an hour. And for those of you who are control theorists, well, I would just say, you know, go for some coffee, come back in half an hour. So this is gonna be at the level that I expect any of you to have something you don't understand, to just stop me, ask any questions at all, you know, even if you think they're basic, ask any questions to make sure you understand this first part. So this first part is gonna be like a warm up for what's coming next. So Anthony is gonna come up after me and explain something more, at least from a control point of view, more interesting in terms of, so I will define what I mean by Lyapunov functions, how do we use them to as certificates of stability, of robustness, and so on. Anthony's gonna come next and say, okay, how do we construct Lyapunov functions as a sum of squares? And finally, Stephen is gonna talk about model invalidation. So, as I said again, what I want to get out of this next half an hour is for you to at least have an idea what a certain concept in control means. The ones I'm actually interested is state space. What is state space? What I mean by state space? What I mean by state variables? Lyapunov functions. Why are they important? Then I want to mention a little bit about, well, what if your model is not really well known? What if you have uncertainty in your model? Maybe you have parametric uncertainty. Maybe you have uncertainty that actually is changing during time. And then in that case, may lead to integral quadratic constraints. And finally, I want to talk about, or at least introduce the notion of hybrid systems. Once again, I'm going to do this through a very, very simple example. It's going to be a mass spring system. And more interesting examples will come afterwards. So the reason I'm using such a mass spring system, such a simple system, is basically to take away everything, you know, take away biology, take away all things that might make me complicated, and just focus on this concept. Okay, so mass spring system, I have a simple mass and I have a spring, and attached to that spring I also have a damper. And so Q is going to define the position of the mass. And by the way, just before I could go on, how many of you have heard about the Lyapunov function? Just so I have a feeling. Okay. So I might go a little faster. If there's something you don't understand, just make sure you slow me down. Otherwise, I'll be done in about 15 minutes. Okay. Make sure that if it's something, you know, this is why I'm doing this. So the first part is really make sure you understand all these concepts. That the mass times acceleration equal to the force applied to the mass. I have the first term, which is proportional to the position of the mass, has to do with the spring. And the second term is proportional to the velocity of the mass, which has to do with the damper. And then maybe I have some external input. So in this picture, Q is the position of the mass, and then the derivative of the position, of course, is velocity. So just for simplicity, I'm just going to give some values to these parameters. So I have, say, this differential equation. So it's a second-order differential equation, and the first question is, can I write an equivalent set of first-order differential equations? And the answer is, for this case, is yes. So for that, what I end up getting is two first-order differential equations. The first one, I just say, the derivative of the position is velocity, and then the derivative of velocity again is acceleration, so it's exactly this equation, so this is what I get. And if I want, I can write this in the vector form, and I get what we call in a linear system, which is, so I have a vector, the derivative of some vector, so in this case, composed by Q and P, so position and velocity. Some A matrix, which are these parameters of the system, times X, again, so I'm defining X to be this vector, plus some B term, which has to do with the input. So I've transformed the system, a second-order differential equation, into two first-order differential equations. So in the more general setting, this is what we call a linear system, and this is given, it's represented in the state space, in the state space form. Again, I have n, so if I have an n, in general, n order differential equation, If the system is linear, I can transform it into something that looks like that, and then I have n first order differential equations, where x again stays variable, and so on. So coming back to my system, so for instance, if I wanted to check, talk about is the system stable in some sense, you know, maybe I push the system away from initial conditions, I let it go, and maybe, you know, what I mean by stability is, will the system maybe converge and just stop at some point. So for that, let me just try to simulate the system. So the first thing I'm going to do is just going to, so first of all, I removed any external inputs. I just pull the mass away and just let it go. So if I simulate that, what I get is I get a position, I get velocity over time, and eventually it goes to zero. And I can draw this also what I call the state space. What the state space gives me is, let me remove time from here and just plot position versus velocity. And if I do that, I get what I call then a trajectory evolving in the state space. Now, in terms of stability, can I conclude anything about this picture in terms of stability? Well, I've simulated one trajectory. If I wanted to check if the system is stable, say, for all initial conditions in here, basically that's what I have to do. I have to check every single initial condition. I have to integrate the system to solve the differential equations and test it for every single point. So that's not very convenient. So there should be another way to do it. And let's first take a look at the energy of the system. So the energy of the system is given by the kinetic energy plus the potential energy of the system. And, well, there's several properties about this function. One, it's positive, except for at the origin, at the equilibria. So we say this function is positive definite. And if I compute the derivative over time, so the derivative along trajectories of the energy, we find out that given by this term, so it means that if we had no damper, if this damper was removed, and it's easy to see that the energy doesn't get dissipated, so basically we'll just oscillate forever. If I have some damper term, then it's, we can see that the energy at least is not increasing. So I'm guaranteed that I cannot, the system is not getting more energy as the initial condition as I start. So E gives us some notion of stability of the system, and in this case it doesn't really grow unbounded the trajectory. Okay. So there's actually a more general notion, which is the notion of Lyapunov function. And what this says is that, so given an equilibrium point, and now I have some general form, an autonomous nonlinear system. Before I had just F was just this linear, I had a linear term, but now just consider some nonlinear system. I call equilibria a point where, well, if I start there, I stay there. Okay, and then let's assume we have a region around that equilibria. We want to check some sort of stability notion. Okay, so there is this result which says, which is more like a definition. If I have a function that is continuously differentiable in that set, and it satisfies several things. Well, it's zero at zero, like the energy function. So for now, if it gets too confused, just think about the energy function. It's zero at zero, and it's positive everywhere else. Okay. So that's what we call, again, this is what we define by a positive definite function. And then we take the derivative along trajectories, and we find out that it's non-positive. It's not positive. So basically, less or equal than zero. And so that's what we call a negative semi-definite. And if that's the case, we conclude then that the origin is a stable point, and we call that V is a Lyapunov function. So in the case of the energy of the system is in fact a Lyapunov function. Moreover, if we have that the derivative along trajectories is strictly less than zero, then we know that actually not only the system is stable, but it's asymptotically stable, meaning that we converge to the origin as time goes to infinity. Yes. So what I mean by, the derivative along trajectories, right? So if I go back, actually I have an example next, I'll show you. Yeah. So coming back to the example, so we see that the energy of the system, and again, just assuming that all the parameters are equal to one for simplicity. So this is the energy of the system. We see that so it's in fact a positive definite function, and in this case it's trivial to see because it's just a sum of squares. And the derivative is less or equal than zero. So that means that according to this definition, according to this definition of Lyapunov, it means that in fact that energy is a Lyapunov function, and the origin is a stable point. Now your intuition tells you, and it is correct, that as time progresses, if you have a damper, you will go to zero. So you know that the system is also asymptotically stable. So there should be a better function, a better Lyapunov function that actually gives you, tells you that the system is in fact asymptotically stable. So if we take another candidate Lyapunov function, and this is a good thing about Lyapunov function, they are non-unique. So another Lyapunov function, let's just say I give you this Lyapunov function. So the first question you have to ask is this a positive definite function? And so one way to check that, and in this case it's quite trivial, I mean again, I'm working with very simple examples, so don't take like this is something, wow, fantastic, no. That will come, but Antony's will do that part. So is this a positive definite function? One way to check that is write it as a sum of squares. So that's, if I write V in this form, then it's obvious to see that this is in fact a positive definite function. So in order to now check if the derivative is in fact negative definite, so I take the derivative along trajectories, and I find out that it's in fact, so I have minus at sum of squares, so it is again, and notice how I use the fact sum of squares, because it's a strong, I mean it's a wave that totally convinces you that it's in fact a sum of squares. So as we expected, the origin is in fact global, asymptotically stable. Okay, so any questions about this Lyapunov functions or how did it? So basically what we've done is that we've shown the property of the system, so in using these Lyapunov functions that didn't involve, we actually didn't have to go and find and solve the differential equation for all initial conditions. So it's a certificate that we get without actually checking every initial condition of the system. The only problem with this is that in general for any type of a Lyapunov, any type of nonlinear system there, it can be quite hard to find this Lyapunov function. So that's the drawback. It's a nice result, nice clean result. On the other hand, it can be quite hard to find them. And that's what we're going to show afterwards, that now we have a way to actually find this Lyapunov function, this piecewise polynomial type Lyapunov functions using sum of squares. So the next thing I want to mention is that you can also think about these Lyapunov functions as some sort of a barrier functions. So for that, let's assume that I just compute this surface. So I just make V at some V of X is equal to some constant C. This defines a level set. So if you think about energy, it defines an energy level. So when I have this condition that V dot is less or equal than zero, it just means that if I start inside of this set, there is no way I can escape it. I have to stay inside of this set. So if I go back to the example I had before, and I just compute level sets for this function, I see that that's marked in red, and these are like in black several trajectories starting at different initial conditions. In fact, once I start at some point in this level set, so they say this level set right here, I'm guaranteed that I always stay inside of this level set. Now, one of the big questions about control is what if you have a system, but you don't, you model your system, but there are certain parameters you don't really know what they are. And you still want to ask questions. You still want to ask questions to say, is the system stable for all possible values that of all parameters that I don't know, but maybe they're in some range. So for instance, just a quick example here, if I have a spring and I don't really know what's the parameter of the spring, it's a fixed but unknown, but say it's between in some interval, say 0.5 to 1.5, can I still say the system is stable? Of course, you know, this is a trivial example, it's always stable, you know, it doesn't matter what the value of the spring is. But again, the up and off gives you a way to check, again, Antonis is going to talk about that later with some more specific examples. So this is a pipe trajectory for different values of the spring, and of course it's always stable. Other type of modeling uncertainty is, what if your uncertainty is actually not fixed? Maybe you have some sort of uncertainty that's changing over time, but you still want to conclude some sort of a robustness or stability questions for all possible parameters, for all values of your uncertainty. So for instance, if you have a spring term, and so the spring is given in the usual way as defined before, but then there is something else we don't know. So the spring is not perfect. There's always something attached to the spring that is, but we don't know exactly how to model. But say we have some sort of a notion of the energy of this system, meaning, so what this tells us is that if I know my position has energy one, so over all time, then I know that this term is going to be bounded by, say, 0.5 in this case. So what this gives us is some sort of an integral. So these are equivalent conditions, right? This gives us an integral constraint on the uncertainty, and the more you have of this, the best, the better. So the question is, well, even if I don't know exactly what this term is, maybe I have some sort of an integral constraint, and then if you don't understand exactly what that means, that's not important at this point. Yes?
So an example of this would be like, you know how long it takes the spring to wear out.
What do you mean to do?
So like after you just spring over and over again, it becomes a certain point.
No, that's more like a time varying. It's like, as you pull the string a little further from where it's supposed to be working, it gets deformed. It's not linear anymore. So it's modeling, you could model something like that as well, but it's more like if you have an actual spring and say you're working on this range of parameters, but then you pull a little bit more away and the spring changes what the real value is.
Yeah, there's a bunch of it. Let me just give a couple examples.
Yeah.
One of these would be, if you have a nonlinear spring and you just didn't know the nonlinear characteristics. Okay, so that would be one example. And so there would be, so the system is truly nonlinear, but you don't know the details enough to put a specific nonlinear in. So you put a whole family out that would satisfy those. And you hope that, in fact, you've covered the real thing. The other thing is, it turns out this also covers the fact that springs can have memory, right? So you can, if it's been stretched for a long time, it actually will not come back quite the same way. That also is captured by those. The other thing is, there could be all sorts of higher order dynamics. For example, instead of having to be, you neglected the mass of the spring. It could be mass in the spring, right? So there's all sorts of, all those things actually, we don't know.
So basically we just put it in some big fat term in there, and we just stuck everything in there. So
the problem is, of course, this might be too conservative to do this, but the idea is that you're sort of covering a whole bunch of different things that you don't know about and you don't know in detail. Yet you can still prove that for all the possible things that go wrong, you're still okay. And the problem is, of course, this way of studying systems is a huge subject that we spend, a whole, like a year course in graduate trying to get one slide is kind of hard, but that's a general flavor.
So then you have this big set. So this is like a big set. And then the more information you get about your spring, maybe you get I know something more. So you add another constraint. And so you're reducing the set the best you can. And that depends maybe on your data. You're trying to find, trying to fit this the best way with your what you have from the real intuition, from the real world. Oh yeah, it is.
But you can put that in. It's kind of thing to make it. Notice that this whole thing can be a function of t.
Yeah.
F of q of t, but it could be f of q of t and t.
Yeah. So that's like contrasting what I talked about before. So if you have just a parameter and the parameter is fixed, you don't know exactly what it is. That's one way of talking about uncertainty. This is in a different way that maybe your uncertainty is changing. So changing over time, that's possible.
I think we're going to do some examples of that. Later?
Yeah.
Are you going to do some IQC examples?
No.
Oh, okay.
But the basic idea, the reason I'm introducing this is that because this SOS machinery allows you to deal with this sort of constraints.
Well, let me just say one other thing about this. I think this kind of uncertainty is very important for modern biochemical networks because there's all usually, you know, you assume things are well stirred and they're not. You assume things, all sorts of characteristics of the system. And for example, when we studied the heat shock system yesterday, we reduced the dimension from 30 states down to 3, right? Which is what Hannah talked about. Well, the difference between the 3-state model and the 30-state model is not that they have different parameter values, it's they have entirely different dynamic order. And that difference in dynamic order can't be captured with parametric uncertainty. It can only be captured with this kind of machinery. And the problem is, it's a whole subject on its own how to do all that. And so, unfortunately, we don't have time to do that. But the idea is that these gaps between the different levels of dynamics can actually be captured with this. And all the machinery you're going to hear about this morning deals with that well. But it's unfortunately it's a quite advanced topic. One thing we should work on is how to make that aspect of the subject more accessible. That's the part we, I would say, haven't done such a good job on. Because this stuff is stuff that's standard to control theorem. So.
It takes an entire year to.
But it takes us a whole year to get to this point with graduate students. So it's a hard part of the subject. We haven't worked yet to try to make it as accessible as it should be. But it's an important part of this story for biology.
So one last thing I want to introduce is the notion of hybrid system. And for that, I just have this really simple system. I mean, imagine you have the spring of your system. So one way we could have done it is say, I mean, that spring, when it's pulled too much, you know, it has a different characteristics, and that's what we talked about before. But maybe, you know, for this simple example, I want to protect the spring. So I have these really strong springs on each side. They can only go as far as that point. So basically, when the mass comes this way, this really strong spring kicks in. So what you can see the system is that you have some sort of a spring K when you're working this between this region where the equilibrium is. And when you go far away from the equilibrium, you have a different. As soon as you touch that point, you have a stronger spring. So you have some sort of a piecewise behavior, and maybe you can model your spring in this way. So this is the part that we had before, is the linear region, and then you really increase the strength of the spring as you go further away from the origin. So you have that on both sides, and again, assume that if the mass comes from to this side and then is pulled up with the other spring, as you go back, you know, assume that the spring doesn't go further than some point, and then just let the system go back to its original linear form. So what that looks in the state space is that, so if you bring back the state space where you have position and velocity, what that does to the state space is that it breaks the state space in three parts. So it breaks the state space where we have, so the first equation is still the same. The first differential equation is still that the derivative of position is equal to the velocity. That didn't change. But the second one changes in the sense that this part works with this k term, so that we're working with just the original spring. On this side, we have the extra spring, so have this differential equation here. And on this side, we have, again, I mean, assuming the spring is the same, it doesn't have to be, but we have a different sort of a equation. So what we have is that, and this is just a very simple example of a hybrid system, is that we have three parts where the system is different, and we have some sort of a switching behavior along. So this is a switching, what we call the switching surfaces. So that's one here, another one over there. And this means the trajectories of the system, once they hit the switching surface, they're gonna change the behavior of the system. And how do I analyze this system? So we analyze the system in a very similar way what we've done before. One way we just, okay, let's try to find the Lyapunov function for the entire system. But sometimes that can be quite hard to do. So in order to actually make life simple in terms of finding these Lyapunov functions, one thing we can do is that, well, if you find the Lyapunov function for the system, the Lyapunov function then says it's positive definite in here, and it's negative along trajectories, but the part of the Lyapunov function that is true here doesn't have to be true in here and in here. So alternatively, what we can do is find a Lyapunov function here that is positive definite and is negative definite along trajectories, but that's not true in this cell. So we find a different Lyapunov function in here that is again positive definite and negative, definite and long trajectories, and we do the same in the other cell. So if and the one thing we have to guarantee then is that the Dapunov function is n continuous along the switching surface, that makes sure that the energy or the global Lyapunov function is always decreasing along trajectories.
How are you going to do that?
It doesn't change much. It's still the same. You just have like one equation that's imposing that the Lyapunov function is continuous along the switching surface. It doesn't really matter what the dimension is. It's just that high. It is possible. I mean, it's actually been done in for piecewise linear systems. It's been done for piecewise linear systems, and actually, so SOS has extended that to work for nonlinear systems, for polynomial nonlinear systems. I think you have an example. Yeah, we have an example of that. We're going to show you a little later. Yes. Yes.
If you're going to assume this from now on, or it's going to work with, can you have discontinuity in your vector field?
Yes. Yes. So in this case, the vector field, the vector field in this case is still continuous. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. It is continuous, yeah. Sorry, yeah. But it's fine. We can still find this up and up functions. Okay, so, yes.
If we find Lyapunov functions in all the regions, can we just like check the boundaries, or do we always have to find a way to together?
Well, you just have to make sure they're so as you have a trajectory and you switch from one point to another point, you have to make sure that there's some sort of a continuity here.
Is that always possible? I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah, it is possible to do it. I mean,
it's always possible.
We
I mean, you might have some crazy Lyapunov function, right?
I don't know if it's always. I mean, I'm sure you can always find a system that that they cannot do anything about. So this is only sufficient conditions that we have. Now it doesn't give you necessary. So okay. So yes. Yeah, it decreases, but in order to make it so, but then once you get higher dimensions, it's quite hard to know where you need to make it continuous and where you don't have to make it continuous. So you just, to simplify things, we just make it continuous along the entire switching surface. But yeah, you're right. In fact, we didn't have to make it continuous. We have to make sure that it decreases. But in order to simplify the computations, it's much simpler to just make it continuous. But you're right, we don't have to make it. So any other questions on this first part? All right, so I'm going to pass it to Antonis, where he's going to have more interesting examples. But just make sure that you understand this concept of control. This was like a half an hour, control 101. And again, if you have more questions along the way, we can ask either Antonis or myself. Okay.